When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, welcome back to the Green Street Hammers podcast. It is episode 44. We are well within our midlife here. Hopefully, this is just the beginning of our life as a podcast.
On episode 44 of the Green Street Hammers podcast, Adam and Jeremiah deep dive on West Ham versus Tottenham, including chats about Jose Mourinho taking over as Tottenham's new manager.
It's a winter wonderland.
West Ham
today
will make any changes needed ahead of this week's match.
Sitting in my car,
and we end the episode as always with Hammers
kind of being
questions.
Like in a snow globe. Green Street Hammers how about podcast. You?
So it snowed here. I'm in Toronto. It snowed here like a week ago, like last Monday. And, you know, cars are sliding off the road. Everyone's freaking out like it happens the first time of year. And then it's just been. It warmed up ever since then, and now it's raining today. So it's like 6 degrees nice. Outside and raining. So it's a lovely fall day all of a sudden again. But
of course,
as gloomy as the weather is, for me anyways, I'm excited kind of because Premier League football is back. And that's always lovely when Premier League football comes back, even when you're staring at Tottenham in the face. But who doesn't love a good London derby, right?
It's exciting, and there's a lot of... There's a lot of big storylines coming into this one. I mean, I'm just – the only thing I'm not excited about is waking up at 5:30 a.m. to watch this kickoff. But, yeah, other than that, dude, it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, so I know that we have a bunch of American listeners as well, and they're very vocal, and some of them in the South. I know Jeff's from Texas himself. I'm going to have – I got to go pick them up tomorrow – 4 racks of pork ribs that I have to make – on Saturday for a family get together, and I love barbecuing and all that, but so it's kind of nice because I'll wake up at probably 6:30. The match starts at 7:30 local time for me, and so I'll be able to get those ribs on the grill early and get them smoking away, which is kind of nice. But if anyone has any tips for getting some nice flavor on some pork ribs, I'm all ears. I'm always happy to learn, so let me know. But as mentioned, this is not a barbecue podcast or weather podcast. This is a West Ham podcast. And as it stands right now, we are tentatively in a relegation battle all of a sudden. And don't look now, but Spurs are as well. But the big news of the week is that Spurs got out in front of their issues, which they determined to be their manager, and have sacked Pochettino and replaced him with Mourinho. Pretty shocking news. Did you expect Spurs to do anything, especially this late into the international break?
No, I think we talked about it last week with our guys, you know, with the whole Pellegrini issue of like, what a perfect timing to sack a manager at the beginning of it, and then you have essentially 2 full weeks to get ahead of it. So, yeah, really weird news to see it kind of midday, you know, 2-3 days before the match was kind of weird to see. And then obviously quickly turning it around, not even, you know, 12 hours later, and you know, Jose's signed up, and he's going to be the new gaffer for them. I think is shocked is a loose word. I mean, Pochettino, great manager. I mean, even I hate to give Spurs any type of praise on this podcast, but I think he's a solid manager. I mean, I just don't think that they were going in the right direction for themselves, and definitely playing below where they have recently. But I think we can kind of both attest to that.
Yeah, and I think with Spurs, it's been sort of a situation with behind the scenes things that are sort of causing issues internally. And when people get comfortable, you know, weirder things can happen. You don't know the boundaries get sort of blurred a little bit on what's permitted and what's not. And there's a bunch of rumors swirling around about players wanting to leave because of, you know, quote unquote personal issues within the team. So, it'll be certainly interesting to see exactly how this shakes out for Spurs, but. They didn't waste any time, as you mentioned, and you know, Jose Mourinho is a Premier League proven winner and also a European winner, and as cocky as he may seem, it's fun to have him back in football. And you know, what else is there to say other than see Saturday, Jose?
God, isn't it great to see all the old tweets? And you know, you gotta love Twitter. Whenever I saw it with Dele Alli, something came up of how he, this is back in like 2007, how he was glad he was never going to have to work for him. And I think even he came out once saying that he would never work for Tottenham because of Chelsea, his love for Chelsea. So it's great how Twitter holds on to these little clips and then they just kind of find their way back up, you know. And then, I mean, we don't do ourselves any good either. You just sit out there with See You on Saturday, Jose, with the actual club media account posting out that horrific video about it. But
did you hate the video?
I kind of did in a weird way. Yeah.
I kind of liked it.
Did you like it? Yeah.
Because first of all, we're sitting, I have the table up here. We're sitting in 16th place. We have 13 points and we are 5 points up on 18th Watford. So who cares? Like, just throw that shade. I'm sure Tottenham being 14th in the table and 1 point ahead of us is a lot worse for them than us being in 16th is for ourselves. Tottenham have these, you know, Champions League aspirations and winning the Champions League and winning the league. So just poke fun. Like, who cares? That also, why delete it when 250,000 views have already gone down on the video? It makes no sense. Just stick to your guns. Also,
and people were copying it and, you know, retweeting it. So it's out there. You're not getting rid of it.
The second anything borderline gets on there, people are recording it, copying it, saving print screen, everything. So I don't know. You might as well stick with it. It got approval to go live by somebody. So whatever. I don't care. To me, that's funny. That's banter. That's you know, poking the bear, if you will. But, you know, see you Saturday, Jose. Like, I'm sure, first of all, he would have had to have been told about this video by somebody else, or the paper is not at all reporting it. And what is this going to do? Make him train the players harder? Like, no, that's a ridiculous sentiment. And sure, things like, you know, poster, bulletin board material goes up, motivates the team. We didn't say, like, Spurs blow, or, like, we opened up, you know, the new White Hart Lane or Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Like, we're the only team to beat you there, the first team to beat you there. Like, we didn't go down that avenue. We poke fun at your manager, who's a big hothead. If anything, what do you do when someone's a hothead? You try and push their buttons, right? Get them off their game. Why not do this? Anyways, I don't care. It's over. It's done with. It doesn't exist anymore, except in the halls of everyone else's screen records and everything. What if you had to pin it down to one thing? What would you say is Tottenham's biggest issue right now as a team? Why are they underperforming?
I know it's kind of like with us when you look at the players they have in that squad, and they haven't changed much, right? I mean, they're very similar that you saw last year going all the way to the Champions League final, very similar past previous seasons, and they've had a lot of success. So I don't know. It's even more of a conundrum to think about than what West Ham currently has going on, because they have really solid team and really solid players that just aren't performing and putting it together. And maybe you see a lot of people, you know, come out and report that, you know, Pochettino was, you know, doing, you know, magical type stuff at Tottenham because of the money that wasn't really coming in, and, you know, the fact that they were just punching way above their level for so many years. And maybe that's true, but nothing's changed realistically. So I don't know if, you know, maybe people are just finally catching on to what it is that they're doing. I mean, injuries don't help, and I know they've had their fair share of injuries, just as a lot of other clubs have. But yeah, to really pinpoint what's going on, I don't really know. I don't know. Do you have a better insight maybe than me?
I would go harder on the injuries thing, just because if you look at their team, like right now they're starting Gazzaniga in goal, who is one of the better backup keepers, despite some you know, mix-ups in recent play. I mean, he's better than Roberto. I'd take him over Roberto any day. Mm-hmm. But they're starting center backs against Sheffield United were Davinson Sanchez, who's great, but then their other one is Eric Dier, who's a midfielder. So with Toby Alderweireld on the bench and Jan Vertonghen seemingly out, you don't know what you're going to get from that. Ben Davies and Serge Aurier. Aurier, again, is a hothead himself. He's someone I would look to press and, you know, jab at, kick at, you know, just try and get under his skin any way you can, because he's a red card waiting to happen at any point in time. Their midfield is great. They have a ton of great midfield players. Dele Alli, Lo Celso, and Ndombele brought in this season are great, great players. Sissoko is proving to be a great player for them, just kind of out of nowhere almost. Heung-Min Son, we all know. Harry Kane, we all know. But they also have options like Lucas Moura off the bench, Harry Winks, Christian Eriksen, obviously. Ryan Sessegnon still with the team. So, like, there's a lot to like about this team. Maybe Pochettino just didn't have the wherewithal to get these players playing together. But to me, if I look at their back four, as it was against Sheffield United, which was a 1-1 draw, Serge Aurier, Davinson Sanchez, Eric Dier, Ben Davies. Nothing about that screams top four, top six to me. If you mix in Alderweireld, if Rose gets back to his top form, you're going to take a good Rose better than or over a good Ben Davies. Ryan Sessegnon as well can mix in on that left side too. But Juan Foyth is their backup at right back. I don't know. I just there's not much I like about that right now. Davinson Sanchez is the one player who I think can be unpredictable at times, but he's a great solid player. The 2 weeks off will have probably both Belgians back. I'm not sure about Vertonghen, but Alderweireld should be back. And Lloris won't be back for this game either. So it'll be, the battle of the backups in this one. So as for what's the issue for Tottenham, it just seems like there's too much going on at the club right now and not enough stability. Jose Mourinho can, quote unquote, park the bus, if you want to call it that at times. But he's got a lot of players. And as I mentioned, sorry to keep rambling here, a really strong core of midfield players that can get the ball and outlet it to the attacking players like Kane, like Son, like Ali, who can step up and make a difference. So I think I don't think anyone's saying it's going to be a really tough challenge for Mourinho to succeed at Tottenham, or at least to get the team playing better. But it's just going to be how reliable is that back four going to be?
Right. And, with Mourinho, anywhere he's gone, he's burnt that bridge on the way out. So, that's maybe a blessing to see down the road that maybe Tottenham might have some success. But when he leaves, something's going to be crazy and something's going to happen. So that's always big to look at too. And I think with Pochettino too, just another point. And I mean, then we can get off the whole Spurs train and why they suck. But he had a really vigorous kind of like training program, if I'm correct on that. And I think a lot of that had to do with maybe players are just now getting tired, and the injuries don't help. But just kind of overdoing it possibly and not letting go, which I don't really see an issue with that. You kind of want your manager to have that. I'd rather have that than the opposite of, chilling on the beach and drinking Mai Tais or whatever that might look like. But yeah, I think that, maybe that throws into there. But my hope obviously is that, Mourinho comes in and does what he always does, and then eventually we'll burn it down on the way out.
Well, let's take a look to the other side of the pitch here. Against Burnley, West Ham set up predictably so. 4-1-4-1. It was Cresswell, Diop, Balbuena, Fredericks, protected by Rice, and in front of him was a midfield attacking four of Anderson, Noble, Fornals, Snodgrass, and Sebastian Allaire. And as far as we're concerned, that's probably going to be the formation going forward. I don't think you're going to see Pellegrini open himself up to changing ideas this late into what could be the end of his career at West Ham. I think he has to stick to his guns and has to succeed by his own structure. If he compromises on this idea, then where's the next compromise come from? Where's he getting his... Because he's been so determined in this formation and making it work that I just can't see him moving away from it. That being said, some injury concerns and some player performances should hopefully mix up the starting 11. I feel like we ask this every week, but do you predict that do you agree with me that the formation will stay the same? Do you think it'll change? What would you rather see as far as formations concerned?
Yeah, I think we said it last week, and I completely agree with you. I don't think he's going to change anything. He never really has before. He did maybe last year a little bit out of necessity and injury, but with what we have going on right now, there is a need for him to do it, but I think in his mind there's not a need for him to actually make any changes. Just like I said last week, I'd love to see a 4-3-3 or some type of variation of that. I think getting three attackers up front, and with potential of Antonio going to be back, and I know he is going to be back, but I don't know if it's going to be at what level of Antonio we're going to see just yet. But getting him up high, getting him playing and attacking and pressing is always good. I mean, it either goes really hard into the net or it goes way up in rosette, but at least at some point,
he's unpredictable.
Exactly. But that's good, and that keeps them on their toes, I guess. But yeah, I would love to see more attacking, but I just don't see Pellegrini, like you said, switching anything up this late.
I can see some player switches happening, but yeah, formation, I'm not so sure about here. The hot button issue as far as defenders goes, I guess it can be split, but I think the real one that people are dying to see be made is Balbuena coming out of the lineup for Angelo Ogbonna to come back in. West Ham were terrific with Ogbonna, and the pity that Pellegrini showed to on Balbuena to bring him back into the lineup, which was really unjust to Ogbonna. He stuck with him for the last few matches, and West Ham have been atrocious at the back. Balbuena, I don't think, can be pinpointed as the cause for, you know, every goal, but against Burnley, he had an absolute mare and on that goal. The first goal that Rice lost the header, Ashley Barnes was unmarked because Balbuena was marking Rice, who was marking, I think it was Westwood who won the ball, or Hendrick. It's just, you know, he just seems to get lost in the shuffle there, and that's been one of West Ham's bigger issues. Are you a proponent of Diop Ogbonna at the back, or are you sticking with Balbuena in this match here?
No, I think Ogbonna has to come back in, and hopefully so. You know, you mentioned that first goal. The second goal, granted, Roberto shouldn't have, you know, tossed it out to him, but he didn't play that one very well either, which gave up, you know, started the whole run on the second goal. And then there was even a point in time towards the end of the match whenever a kind of crazy cross came in. I don't know if you remember this, but the crazy cross kind of came in. Literally, Balbuena was the only one in the box, and at that point, either him or somebody, Roberto, should have been called out, like, hey, you just hold on to the ball or kick it upfield. Instead, he just kind of hoofed it and went out of bounds and gave up another corner. So, yeah, just too much negativity and too much kind of disappointment out of that. I don't know what's going on with the general, but, yeah, I would definitely want to see Ogbonna come back in. So hopefully that's one of the major changes.
I think Balbuena would absolutely thrive in a three-at-the-back system. Because he is mobile, he may be our most, despite Diop running like a Clydesdale up the middle of the pitch a few times, I think Balbuena moves the best out of our three center backs. But, you know, Pellegrini's not going to play that. So we can get that idea out of our heads for now, but I'm with you on Ogbonna there. You wrote a missing persons report on Arthur Mazuaku, who has shown up playing for the Democratic Republic of Congo. Do you think he'll draw back into this one over Cresswell?
That's tough. I mean, I want to see it.
I completely agree. I'm so happy you said that.
It's tough because, I mean, Kress is, he's played okay. You know, maybe he's been up and down, but he hasn't been, I guess, horrific this year. And Mazuaku has been pretty good, you know, and it's kind of like we've always kind of slated him a lot on the show, and other shows I think have as well, because last season he didn't have a very good time. But yeah, he's done okay so far this year, so it's tough. I know I wrote the missing persons report kind of as a joke, but kind of in serious, because we don't know where he's been. I mean, he hasn't even been on the bench. And then he shows up internationally, kind of like Winston Reed, too. Same kind of scenario with that. And yeah, so maybe seeing him come back out, he definitely would have more pace. And I think that his pace on the left side with Anderson might, like you said, kind of get in the face and get in the grill of Serge Aurier a little bit, if he's going to be playing on that right side, and could potentially, you know, frustrate him or be able to take him over at some point, maybe more than Kress might be able to. So to me, I'm not going to be disappointed either way. It's tough, but at least they should both. One should be starting and the other one should be on the bench.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think both players play well with a short leash on them. When Cresswell got injected into the team this year with Mazuaku's suspension, he came up with goals in back-to-back games. And then, you know, things people start to get complacent, understandable. But look at Mazuaku as well. When he gets dropped in, he's dynamic. He's crossing the ball. He's doing his dribbles. He's playing well with Anderson. And then a few games later, he gets a red card. And it's like, what the hell is the problem? I think the problem is they need that constant motivation. And this is where maybe it's an issue of Pellegrini again, who's not a very good man manager, which all reports are he's a systematic manager and not necessarily a man manager like Slaven Bilic was. Bilic will know the guy to put his arm around and, you know, be buddy-buddy with him. I can't see Pellegrini doing that with anybody. Maybe that's just an outsider's perspective. Well, it is an outsider's perspective, but I don't know if I've got that right or not. But I think you need to know each player on your team and how they perform the best. And I think having a constant fire under Cresswell and Mazuaku, and having both of those players who, on their day, can be terrific Premier League, like, you know, tops in the Premier League fullbacks, because they have been this season. That's not just some crazy statement. I'm saying they both have had elite games this season for West Ham. Mm-hmm. Put them on short leashes. Let them know that guy's on the bench. And if they have a bad foul in the first half, let in a goal, that fullback's coming on to take over in the second half or in the next match. Like, put that fear of playing poorly in their heads to sort of raise the level of competition in the team. I just feel like there's so much given with the same teams being picked week after week. There's no reason to perform if you know you're going to get your starting bonus when you show up to the game on the weekend. So I don't know. Maybe that's just me. I'm getting too hot-headed here. Something I want to point out about the team as well. I feel like a lot of players, specifically Lanzini, Fornals, Anderson, I wanted to highlight the last two, Fornals and Anderson, get a lot of shtick because if they're not on the score sheet, everyone goes, what the hell are they doing? They're not they're not contributing. With $70 million between the two of them, we can't get a goal, which is fair criticism. They're attacking players and they get paid to play football. But there's they're still people in the end, and you know, as much of a right as you have to criticism, you also have to you should at least be conscious of the fact that they're real people. And Albion Ajeti goes for this as well. Ajeti went on international duty with Switzerland. Switzerland has now qualified for Euro 2021. Is it 2020? I don't know. Anyways. So he had a great time away. He played in the match, the first match that they won. He didn't score in either of them, but either way, the point I'm trying to make is you get little glimpses into these players' lives through social media and whatnot. And it's really nice to see someone like Fornals, a 23-year-old kid from Spain. He keeps posting. He's either posting about his family and his girlfriend or wife all the time, who he seems to love both parties very much. And the other thing he posts outside of training is that he's learning English, and he keeps posting little stories about him. I think it was him with his teacher giving the thumbs up with a certain level of English book in front of him. Like, to me, that's like the personal side of players that I love seeing. I love seeing that dedication. If Fornals was just here to cash a paycheck and move on, he would have no interest in taking in the cold weather training and embracing it with his mates, learning English to better get to know the city. He would have no interest in that stuff. He's invested in being here, and he knows that right now he's probably not performing up to his own standards. And we've seen him get those grade A chances and go in on net and you know, pass the ball instead of shoot it. That's confidence. That's something that'll come in time. But just try to remember they are people as well. Felipe Anderson spent time with, I forget the association, but he went to his schools and met a bunch of kids and was playing football with them. And then in some candid video shots, or what looked to be candid, was literally like, you could see like sincerity in him laughing and playing with the kids because they were playing football and you know, they were scoring on him or he was scoring on them. It was just so great to see. Like, there's this, I'm sure some stuff is, you know, forced on the players from their clubs and whatnot, but to buy into it that much and fully take part in it, it is something kind of special to see. And I think Felipe Anderson and Pablo Fornals are invested in this. I think something needs to happen to get them kickstarted here, and I think a 4-3-3 would be perfectly suited to do that. Let Fornals run the channels up and down the middle. Let Felipe Anderson stay high, and let their, you know, this positivity of them off the pitch be carried to the game itself. That's on them. That's on the manager. But, you know, people kind of forget sometimes that footballers are players too, right?
Dude, I completely agree, and you said it perfectly. I mean, and I think that once we see Anderson and once we see Fornals get a goal, not just an assist, but get a goal, you're going to see the expression on their face of just how overjoyed they're going to be. And yeah, they are people too. I think a lot of times what people get stick for is if they think that they're not out there performing, you know, at their 100% level, if they're out there just kind of lollygagging around. And we have seen that, and I think that that's okay criticism at that point. If the player's not out there giving his all, then yeah, maybe there should be some stick for that. But I think a lot has to come into play too with the, you know, the formation that we're in and the other players that are playing around them. I mean, this is a lot of individuality, but still there's 11 men out there trying to run around and they all have to play together at some point. So yeah, I think it's key just to remember that. And it is cool to see them out there. And that's a great thing about social media, is not really to get on and slate the player, but to just see that they are human in their life. And I think he wrote a great piece about Fornals, and he has this opportunity to kind of fill in and get this chance. And you know, confidence is only going to come with playing more. So I will be elated whenever he gets in and gets his first goal and gets that going. And I mean, a Yeti, I think, you know, just, I really have high hopes for him too. And Anderson's going to come around. We've seen it time and time again. But, you know, everybody has bad matches here and there. You just have to kind of stick behind them and know that they're going to pull through eventually. But, you know, I think it's just going to have to be, we got to get behind when I say we, like, we're there, but we're not there. But as a whole, the fan base has to get behind this club. I mean, West Ham feed off of the fans just as much as we feed off of them, the players. And they're not going to perform as well if we're not going to be behind them. And I think getting behind them is the most important part. Yeah, we don't want to see Roberto in net, but getting out there and laughing at him when he's screwing up is not going to help anything. I think if Anderson or Fornals have a bad match or they're not playing well, you know, the first 20, 30 minutes, like, kind of booing and jeering at them is not going to, it's not going to do anything good. I mean, because like you said, the human part of it is their confidence is going to be shot. They're going to be completely, they're not going to have the mindset of, well, I'm making, you know, $100,000 a week. So not $100,000, 100,000 pounds a week or whatever it is. But, you know what I mean? Like they need that support and they need that kind of backing them. So yeah, absolutely right. As long as they're out there playing 100%, I think that sometimes when you do see sometimes of the, it's okay to maybe get on them a little bit, but understanding too that it just takes a while and they are people. So you're right.
We'll leave the predictions to our weekly prediction piece that's coming out tomorrow, as well as our predicted formation here. But we're all on the same page when I think I speak for all of us when I say we really hope that West Ham gets up for this London Derby here. But as we do with every episode, let's finish off with some Hammers Polls questions. On Twitter, it is at Hammers Polls. The first one comes just an hour ago, 136 votes already on it. Which is your favorite London Derby? West Ham versus Arsenal, Tottenham, Chelsea, or Millwall? Up to you first.
I'm going to go with Tottenham. I mean, I started following West Ham when they were in the Championship and have watched them play Millwall, not in person, but obviously that's the big, you know, that's the big one that everybody hates. And you've seen it in whatever movies and you've seen it in history and everything. But with Tottenham, more recently than not, that's kind of been the game to get up for. So for me, long story short, yeah, it would be Tottenham. What about you?
I completely agree. I don't have the history, self-admitted, to be in that Millwall bunch. And having clicked on the voting here, I know how it shakes out. But I'm with you in Tottenham. There's always something to be said about the matches, especially the back and forth on Twitter, which, you know, a lot of times it's toxic. But seeing Antonio do whatever the hell dance that was at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium was truly amazing. So, you know, to see that get placed everywhere, see him sitting over top of that toilet bowl looking stadium, really does add to the supremeness of that derby. Tottenham is first for voting, 51%. Second is Millwall at 41%, and Chelsea and Arsenal are tied at 4%. And this, I mean, that answer comes down to personal, right? Like, if you're the biggest Declan Rice fan in the world, you've only been supporting the club for, you know, one or two seasons, and he got his goal against Arsenal. You probably, you know, that personal connection to it probably makes you go, you know, pick Arsenal in that one. So I get that for sure. Okay, this is an interesting question, one we kind of talked about a little bit in the past and also in the blog. This question's from at Adam_MC1R. Is West Ham's downfall not signing enough proven Premier League players? What do you think?
I'm going to say no. And it's easy to say yes on that one just because the Premier League is a beast on its own. It's a way different, ballgame. The Bundesliga, you can go through, you know, the La Liga, Ligue 1, all the different ones, and they're big leagues, but the Premier League is just a lot tougher, a lot more physicality. But I think if you get the right players to come in there with that mindset and they get good training, you know, training is obviously not what it equates to in real life when they're actually on the pitch, but if there's a good training program in place with a lot of physicality in place and with a mindset set on that, then I think that it doesn't really matter where you get your players to come from. You can look at the rise of in the top six. You know, the majority of those players, when they get them, when they snag them, they're coming from other leagues for the most part, and they never seem to really skip a beat. And I think it's a training program, and it's kind of what you have. So I think it's an easy cop out to me anyway to say yes. So I'll take the no, and maybe hopes that you do say yes, so we differentiate. But I don't know.
I'm inclined to say no, because like you said, there's a lot of Premier League proven players who became Premier League proven players coming from outside leagues. And like you said, you know, look at Liverpool, Chelsea. Chelsea's the wrong example. Liverpool, Manchester City, Manchester United, these teams with rich histories, and as well that have a high wage bill. A lot of their players are plucked, like you said, from top European leagues. I do think the further you go down the list, you run the risk of paying a high price tag for somebody who's not going to acclimate as well. I think there's a higher risk of not acclimating for those players further down on the pecking order. Elite's elite. If you sign Zlatan from Milan and bring him over here, he's going to score goals for you. Like that's unequivocally going to happen. But if you sign someone like Felipe Anderson, who was not the highest, you know, scouted player in Serie A a few seasons ago, but he's a player who looked at, you know, at times to be extremely dynamic and a great goal scoring threat, versatile. You can kind of take a risk and a gamble on that. And we see it. He's been up and down just sort of to follow along with that. So I would say it's not West Ham's downfall. That's kind of a ridiculous statement in itself, just based off of how severe that sounds. But I do think English players do need to be prioritized when building out the core of the team moving forward, for sure. 52% say yes, 48% say no. Next question is from the same person, underscore, at Adam underscore MC1R. West Ham are 9-2 in betting odds to get relegated, and Pellegrini is 11-4 to be sacked. If West Ham don't win on Saturday, is it time for the board to act and get someone in to save the season? Yes or no? Adam, you're killing these questions, man.
I'm assuming you're going to let me go first on this one.
Of course, as always.
Yeah, I'm going to say yes. I'm going to stick to my guns. And a few weeks ago, probably about a month ago now, I kind of put it out there that after, you know, the Burnley match, depending on how Burnley match went, and then depending on how this match went, if it didn't go so well, then yeah, it's I'm definitely on that Pellegrini out train. And I could see it now. I mean, I'm trying to stay optimistic, and you know how positive I typically can be. But if things go south in this match and we're losing severely to Tottenham at home, this could be one of those matches where we see a lot of the same things that happened. You know, that Burnley, that Burnley match when the flag went in the middle of the pitch and the fans are turning around and yelling at Sullivan and Gold, and, you know, poor Trevor Brookings in the crowd, like, crying, and all this is going on. And it has, this match has the potential to do that. So, yeah, I think if, you know, looking at it kind of glass half empty, is if this is a bad match and things don't go well, then yeah, I'm definitely Pellegrini out, and it's not going to look good.
I completely agree with you. The severity of this is the same in one aspect for both teams, but West Ham take it up a level. Tottenham need points. They need to get back into this top six range, and a win for them would put them back up, you know, on level with Arsenal and Sheffield for fifth and sixth right now. That being said, with a game in hand, of course. But like, West Ham really, really need to win this game mentally. They're coming off of a two-week break. Vacation was canceled for the players. Training was mandatory, as far as I've heard, through different people on Twitter, for players who stayed with the club and didn't go on international duty. There's an emphasis on winning this game, because you wrote about it beautifully as well. A lot can be, you know, you can do a lot of patchwork on the state of West Ham right now by beating Tottenham at home. This match is historical. There's a strong link between these two clubs. You know, getting a result against them is something that needs to happen for the psyche of this team, and I think it could be absolutely damaging if, like you said, I don't even think if we just lose to them and there's a lack of effort on the pitch against the same issues, that's all it needs. It doesn't have to be a 5-0 loss. It can just be a predictable loss, and I think that that could basically do it for them.
Yeah, I think it's big. It's bigger than we probably want it to be, but that's kind of the position we put ourselves in, the clubs put themselves in.
Completely agree, and this is a question that goes hand-in-hand with it. Hammer's Polls are sharing this question from at MyWHUFC. Who is more disliked, David Sullivan, Karen Brady, or David Gold? by the way, 72% of people said that Pellegrini will get sacked after this weekend if they lose.
Okay, I'm going to let you go first on this one.
I voted Karen Brady, mostly because David Gold and David Sullivan have both followed or been true to their word of staying out of the media as far as stupid comments have been concerned. Yes, they still pipe up every now and then, and yes, people want to blame them for everything, so their names get dragged back into different things, you know, truthful or not. But Karen Brady has no tact for someone who's as great at business as she is. Boy, does she need to learn how to read the room or read the situation better. I wouldn't be surprised if she was tweeted out that video on the other day of "See you Saturday, Jose," because that would just be perfectly her brand of piping in at the wrong time. She boils my piss, as people say, just based off of her generic comments that, you know, whether it's writing for the newspaper or digging somebody out, it's like people in glass houses, you know what I mean? Like, she is running a club that is so far from perfectly run, mm-hmm. largely because of her involvement in this, in the David's involvement in this. She bothers me as a character, and I wish she would, you know, lose her phone or you know, something along those lines. I don't need to hear from the owner of the club. That's all it is.
Yeah, so for me, you know, David Sullivan, he gets a lot of stick, or he has in the past, not much recently, because of either something he said or his sons have come out and said, which, by the way, they've kind of stopped that, and the one's doing really well for the women, but that's not the question. With David Gold, he's kind of fun to pick at, you know, because he comes out, and what was it, last season? It was like 2 seasons ago, right, where every other night was like, don't go to sleep, DG, and he's just fun to kind of pick at with that, but I completely agree when it comes down to Karen Brady, of just the asinine things that come out of her mouth, the things she says, the things that she's not followed through on, just in the way she kind of holds herself and presents herself on anything. I don't know if you've watched like the what is it, The Apprentice? I think is what it's called.
I haven't tuned in. I did catch the West Ham Way episode with the fellow there, the West Ham fan, mm-hmm. which was great.
Yeah, I forget his name already, so apologies to that. But I have watched it in the past, and even on there, even if you didn't have any association with West Ham, it's just frustrating to listen to her talk and to see her talk. But so I think, you know, going with her for me is an easy pick.
Yeah, 60% agree, Karen Brady. David Gold only has 4%, and I think it's because people genuinely sympathize with him. Yes, he makes some mistakes and whatnot, but he's a more sympathetic character for sure. Here's a good question, and maybe we should end on this one. It brings us full circle with the manager chat to start. Many managers were talked about and suggested as possible replacements for Pellegrini. Would you have, let's put it in context here. If West Ham lose against Tottenham, let's say they get beat 3-0 at home, would you have Sam Allardyce back to run the club? At the very least, to the end of the season.
Oh, God. No, I don't think I would. I think that we talked about it last week, and getting the likes of him or Moyes or somebody else that's going to come in is simply going to be just kind of, you know, they're going to come in as a caretaker and kind of take care of things and probably keep you up, and it'll look a lot like it had 2 seasons ago, where we stayed up. It wasn't pretty, but we stayed up. And, you know, Moisey did a good job, and he did what he came in to do. But I don't think that we can't be in that situation. We've been sold this this idea of what this club's supposed to be, and doing that every other season's is not it. So as much as I kind of love poking a fat Sam and thinking maybe him coming back would be something I guess realistically I wouldn't want to see it. Kind of deviating from the question a little bit, though, if Pochettino was ever an option, and regardless if he, you know, he was Spurs and has got a lot of Spurs in his blood, yeah, I would take him, but that's not the question.
Yeah, I would take Pochettino as well, just because he's got that, so the new age ideas to get a team going. But I would take Allardyce back in a heartbeat. Maybe it's rose colored glasses. I try to stop my anti-Pellegrini, but I'm past the point of no return with Pellegrini. I think he needs to leave the club in order for them to push on, certainly this season. Mm-hmm. I just think he doesn't want to change his ideas, and his ideas aren't working with the club, and that is a problem because you need someone to be dynamic. That may be contradictory to Sam Allardyce, but Allardyce has done it in the Premier League countless times. He's gotten teams together, he's got them playing well, and he's got them not conceding goals. Whether that's going to be boring or not, I would rather be bored and getting results than be exciting and losing every game, which is what it has been. Quote-unquote exciting hasn't even been there. We've just been losing games. So get the team together, reorganize. The Pellegrini hire was good on paper when it happened, but it didn't pan out. Let's reset. Let's go back. Let's start it again with someone new. Here's a question. This is an Adam Poles question for Jeremiah. Is Rafa Benitez at the top of your list to replace Pellegrini?
He's on the list, but I don't know if he's at the top of the list, and only because he's a name that continues to keep, you know, coming up. And I think he definitely had a bad stick at Newcastle. Not a lot of opportunity there. So he's going to go off and make the money out in China, just like Pellegrini did. but he's definitely on the list. But kind of along what you were saying with finding the right guy, you want to find that right person, and Pellegrini wasn't, I don't think, the first choice. But finding who is your first choice and going out and actually getting that first choice, making that the person that you want, and for all these different reasons, maybe not because it's a big name or because they've done well in the past. I'm completely okay of going out and get somebody like the Cowley brothers, or going out and get somebody that's maybe less, has taken clubs. Like, if you look at all the success that Eddie Howe's had at Bournemouth, taking somebody like him and bringing him in, I'm completely okay with that. Or even bringing in somebody that has no really affiliation with the EPL at all, but they've just had a kind of young success somewhere else. I can't remember his name, so this is going to really butcher up the story, but he's the manager at RB
Leipzig.
No, it's the one in Austria.
Oh, Salzburg.
Salzburg. Yeah, he's American manager. The manager's out there, and that dude has more passion and heart than I've seen. And you know, they're playing in, I think it's the Europa League, and they're winning some games, and they're looking pretty good. And they're playing really well. Obviously, in Austria is not maybe as competitive as playing in the EPL, but just seeing the heart and kind of passion behind it, I want somebody like that. So, yeah, Benitez is on the list, but I don't think, for me anyway, he wouldn't be my number one choice. What say you?
Yeah, I think that you put out a good inspired pick there with the Salzburg manager. No, I would stay far, far away from Rafa Benitez, just based off of the allegory of Pellegrini. Look at Mourinho. Mourinho could have had every single job in China with the fattest paycheck he's ever gotten. And granted, he got a big one coming here, but coming back to Tottenham. But he stayed out of football, whether it was to take time off or whatnot. He wanted to stay in competitive football. He wants to win. The term serial winner is used for him a lot. That's what I want. I want my manager motivated to win. I want, and Mourinho has a system that works, and he knows that it works, and you know. I think that's the mentality you want. Klopp's not going to, if Klopp gets sacked tomorrow, he's not going to go to China for a payday. No. He's going to go work on his reputation and his legacy as a manager. Pellegrini has that legacy, but he's what, 70 something years old? Like, you know what I mean? Certain things make sense. I want a manager that's hungry, that wants to continue to win. I don't think that's Rafa Benitez, and him tipping his hat and going to China is a sign of that in my eyes. Give me someone young and exciting.
Agreed. I'm gonna throw a question at you from Jeremiah Poles. Then, since you're gonna do that, I posted this out on Twitter maybe 2 weeks ago, so I don't know if you voted on it or not. Got over 500 votes on it, and it was about 63% said yes. Is this the worst that you've ever seen West Ham play as a fan?
Tough to say. Again, it's been a handful of years for me, No, I want to say the first season at the London Stadium had shades of the worst season I've ever, the worst I've ever seen. Congratulating the post for being man of the match. I remember I invited a pal of mine over, two buddies over, Mike and Ben, to watch West Ham play Hull City. And my buddy Ben is a Manchester United fan, so he understood completely what the shakedown of the league was. But Mike goes, oh, so is it going to be a good game? Is West Ham going to lose or win? Like, what are you expecting? And I said, oh, Hull's going to get relegated. West Ham should steamroll them. Hull won, I think, 2-3 in the game. Mm-hmm. And it was just like it was so unpredictable. The team was so dead. There were so many passengers on board. So it's tough to say. It's such a small snapshot because, a month and a half ago, we wouldn't even be – that question could be considered, is this the best you've seen West Ham play in 10 years? And the answer could very well have been yes. Right. It's such a difficult snapshot to put into context. I say no, and I'll give it to the – I'll let the rest of West Ham dictate for itself. There's been relegation seasons and whatnot. So I say no, but it is not inspired whatsoever right now.
No, and it was interesting. Like I said, 63% of it said yes, but a lot of the if people said no, I tried to get them to comment, and a lot of the comments were, kind of lifetime followers of West Ham or have been following for a while, and there has been a lot worse times than this. But in recent memory, you can see that West Ham's obviously picked up a younger crowd and a younger following just because of the yes answer itself. But yeah, it's tough. It's tough times. So hopefully, we can get that fixed.
Well, so much for a quick episode here. We're at 40, we're approaching 44 minutes as recording goes. We're both jacked up. We're both excited for the weekend. Any final thoughts going into the London Derby?
No, I'm just excited. I'll be jacked up at 5:30 a.m. with my coffee and maybe throw a little JD in there just for fun to kind of get the morning going. But no, just excited and ready to get going. And hopefully this will be a match that we can get things turned around. And if not, then obviously look for more criticism and negativity coming. But hopefully something can happen.
I love the JD fix in there. And, you know, it's West Ham. We either drink to celebrate or we drink to drown the sorrows. And with that, we say come on, you Irons, and we'll catch you guys next week. Thanks for listening.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more, right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.